We're with Dr. Manny Matus, and we're going to take your calls this hour and your stories as we're talking about consciousness, precognition, the psychic realm on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Our final hour with Dr. Manny Matus. We're talking about his work, The Borders of Normal. As a psychiatrist, you do have to decide whether a person is truly experiencing a psychic issue or is a psychotic. How do you tell the difference, Manny?
Well, the thing is, if someone has a vision, for example, or if someone's hearing voices, there are certain qualities that would distinguish a psychic from a psychotic experience. For example, if someone hears a voice, a psychotic hallucination tends to be very, very frightening. It's also very frequent. It could be every day. Auditory hallucinations could also be other things besides voices. It could be the sound of machinery or the sound of insects. There may be more than one voice, two or three voices talking to each other about the person. The voices might be accusatory or threatening, whereas psychic hallucinations tend to be infrequent. They may occur only once or twice in a lifetime, and they tend to be reassuring and calming. The other thing is with psychosis, you can't just look at one symptom, such as hearing a voice. You have to look at the whole person, because psychosis is a major mental disorder which affects the person's ability to function in society, whether the person is a student or whether they're going to work or within the family. If they're not able to function, and if they have a lot of other symptoms aside from the hallucination, for example, a thought disorder or paranoid ideation, or, you know, feelings of reference, feelings that people are talking about them, this type of thing. So there's more than just one symptom that you need to make a diagnosis of psychosis.
Can you make a misdiagnosis? Is that conceivable?
Yes. In fact, it has happened. There was a psychologist that did an experiment where he had a group of 8 people, including himself, and he had each one of them go to a different emergency room in a different hospital around the country and to tell the doctor in the emergency room that they were hearing voices. And in each case, the patients, well, they weren't patients, they were actors pretending to be patients. But they were misdiagnosed as schizophrenic, they were admitted to the ward, they were given medication, but they didn't take medication. And once they got to the ward, the patients knew that they were faking. So they were able to fool the doctors, but they weren't able to fool the other patients.
Patients knew. How did they know?
Well, because these people were otherwise normal, aside from the fact that they said they were hearing voices, in terms of their appearance, their behavior, their conversation, the way they were thinking, the way they presented themselves, everything else about them was completely normal. So that's why I say you can't make a diagnosis on the basis of a single symptom.
How come the doctors couldn't figure that out?
Well, unfortunately, you know, sometimes doctors make mistakes.
Well, that's true. That's true. But the patients didn't.
That's right, because, well, the patients live with it. They know the illness so well.
They know the symptoms and everything.
That's right.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Judy in the Ozarks in Missouri. Hey, Judy, go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been waiting to talk to someone who knows a little bit about the brain, or a lot about brain. I have been a mystic and had visions all my life, and I have had many, many near-death experiences where I've left my body. But I think one of the most interesting things that ever happened to me is when I went to London as an adult, and I saw a picture of the war room where they did all the major planning for their European front.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I used to go as out-of-body experience when I was little. And there were a whole bunch of us up above, kind of sitting like in a balcony, and we were all in spirit, but not physical. And they were very upset because I was so young and they didn't think I should be there.
But you did that as a remote viewing, huh?
No, it was out of body travel. And when I saw the picture of the war room, I realized that's where I had been as a child.
Have you still been able to duplicate that?
Well, not lately. I usually go where there's really intense suffering, like when the Israeli people... And we were fighting along the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Was that the 57 war?
1967.
67. Yeah. I go to places that are really, really bad.
Why?
I don't know whether I'm there to help balance.
What do you think of this, Manny?
Well, I'm curious to know, do you have these experiences when you're sleeping or when you're awake?
When I was little, they were when I was sleeping. The other ones where I've been out of body, I'm just waking up.
Okay.
Between sleep and awake. But the most interesting experience I think I've ever had is when I was looking, searching for meaning, because I was very depressed because I'm in physical form and there is nowhere on earth the love that you feel when you are in that particular place of knowing what all-encompassing love is. And when I was doing meditation, I was taken and I could see, if you know what glitter looks like in a helmet for a motorcycle helmet,
yes,
how different angles. Well, this was alive lights, and the whole screen of my vision was filled with this glittering, beautiful, different colors of orange and yellow. And I could hear the voice saying, "This is love," and I was totally engulfed in it. And it was just a beautiful experience. But I found listening to people talk about near-death experiences, my near-death experiences aren't wonderful. They're just, I'm out of my body and I'm seeing what's going on. And the last time it happened, I was in surgery. And as I came back into my body, I could hear the anesthesiologist saying, "We're losing her." And I thought,
oh, you geez. Don't
know anything. I'm back.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But, that type of stuff. And that's the reason I called with the question about what is the difference between schizophrenia and having these types of visions, because I've been a...
All right. Well, that's kind of a fine line, isn't it, Manny?
Well, yes and no. Like I said, with that study where these patients were misdiagnosed because they reported hearing voices, but otherwise they were fine. So the question is whether the person can carry on with their daily life, or whether they're able to function, or whether there's an illness that's interfering with their life. So you can't make a diagnosis just on the basis of the fact that a person is hearing voices or is having out-of-body experiences. That wouldn't lead to a diagnosis of schizophrenia, because someone with a diagnosis of schizophrenia has to have a thought disorder as well. They have to have problems with their thinking and with their emotions and, with their appearance, with their behavior. It's all-encompassing. So the description of the type of experiences you've had doesn't sound like schizophrenia to me.
What about hallucinations compared to actual psychic things? What's the percent there?
Well, there again, hallucinations can be found in a lot of different medical conditions, not just schizophrenia. And it can also be, hallucinations can also be found in people who are mentally and physically healthy. So, I guess each person has to be assessed, in terms of, what their symptoms are and how much they're affecting the person's ability to function. But I was just going to say about your caller, I was thinking maybe one of the reasons she goes to places when she's out of her body, she goes to places of pain.
That are dark, yeah.
And places that are dark, maybe she's trying to help. Maybe in some way she's thinking on a spiritual level she can help these people.
You think she's doing it on purpose?
I think so. I think there must be a reason why she's going to those places.
Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
Dr. Mattis, you're a breath of fresh air, let me tell you.
Thank you.
I have two questions, and I have a really interesting experience. Do you ever do psychic fairs and find that your sessions are better because of the environment as opposed to, let's say, one-on-one? And do you know the work of Dr. Stanislav Grof? He does spiritual emergence or altered states. He's a psychiatrist, by the way.
Yes, definitely I'm familiar with Dr. Grof. In terms of psychic fairs, I don't go to psychic fairs, but I have attended international conferences on science and spirituality. And I do find that when I'm with like-minded individuals, these types of experiences are more common.
Yeah, that I could see that happening.
Well, for one thing, you feel more accepted and you feel more able to talk about what's going on.
Yeah, you feel more comfortable.
Right, right.
And, you know, you don't feel like you're going to get ridiculed or put down. And I think
exactly.
That's important to a lot of people.
So therefore, you're not so defensive.
That's true. And again, I'm fascinated with the possibilities of being able to, you know, like priests will perform exorcisms. There's something demonic about that. Have you come across anything like that in your studies?
Demonic possession?
Anything like that?
No, I haven't. But, you know, there was a psychiatrist, Scott Peck. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Right.
He wrote
this
book called The Road Less Traveled.
Okay.
And he wrote about a lot of paranormal experiences, but he also got into writing about evil, what his concept of evil. And he did write about possession and demonic possession. So I haven't come across that personally, but I am familiar with it.
Let's go to Divine Texas, first-time caller. Cheryl is with us. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be on your show. I wanted to say thank you for your guest here. I had a really strong, very powerful encounter before Princess Diana passed away. And I dreamed about her. I visited her for like 2 weeks every night in my sleep. And she gave me the whole, like, she just like toured me. And I was driving in her car and having lunch and tea. And we just talked and we just communicated.
You hit it off, huh?
We just hit it off. And when the night that she died, I was sitting on the couch. It was bad weather. We're having a storm. And I was doing laundry, couldn't sleep. And I just knew something was wrong. And then when I saw it, everything happening on the television screen, it just was like so surreal. It was just.
That was a bizarre situation.
I've ever had anything like that ever happen to me. Don't know if anyone else has ever had that kind of, I mean, it sounds like what you're talking about too. And then before my son died, I had the same thing. I had the vision of a dream for like 2 weeks and just couldn't sleep, an uneasy feeling, and two cops coming to his dad's door.
Oh, horrible.
And I didn't know what to think of it. And it was just, I've never had anything else like that happen. I'm familiar, you know, I've heard, you know, it only happens in close people to me when, if they're going to die, I kind of know things like.
Do you tell them?
Well, I don't know who's going to die. I just get really.
You just know somebody's going to die.
I just get, I start crying, you know, like I get very emotional and very sensitive and just crying and upset, but not sure why.
Manny, what causes that?
Well, first I want to say I'm sorry to hear about your son. And I was wondering if you've had any post-death contact with him.
No, any what? No, I have not.
Had any contact with him since he died?
No, I have not. And several people, my daughters and several other friends have, but no, I have not, and that's very troubling.
Okay, well, in terms of your question, George, what causes that? Well, I guess I would call that a precognitive dream or a premonition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's related to, on a theoretical level, you could say on one level, we're all connected. And somehow we're able to communicate with each other in a way that we're not really aware of. You know, I think that especially with someone very close, like a family member, especially, you know, a child or a sibling or a parent or a spouse.
If you want to communicate with a deceased loved one, is it easier to be a little more aggressive to try to communicate with them, or do you lay back and let them try to come to you?
I would say the latter. I would let them come to you, you know, because they may not be ready.
Do you have to give them any signs that you're ready?
Well, you have to. I think you have to say that you're open to the experience and that you would love to hear from them. And then the ball is in their court.
Let's go out to Virginia. Keith's with us. Welcome to the program, Keith.
Hi, George. How are you?
Hey there. Good.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay, great. I wanted to mention a couple of things. One, last night with your guest, I called in, but too late to get on. And there's some commonality in some of the topics tonight about the paranormal and something I consider to be quite a link between paranormal and the Judeo-Christian teachings of the Bible.
Okay.
And the missing link could be the content of a book called Eternal Man. And anybody can Google that or search it on YouTube or Amazon. You can find different lectures and things about that. And over the years, this is a book written by a BYU religion and philosophy professor. And over the years, of listening to Coast to Coast, it's just been quite remarkable that there is so much of the paranormal that can be clarified and expanded upon, perhaps, to give some understanding about this, of the eternal nature and our spiritual nature as well. And to switch to another topic really quick, many years ago, I had a dream, and it could have been induced by listening to Coast to Coast a lot about near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. I've had two friends who passed away only about, I think, 13 days apart from each other. And about 25 days after the second one, I had a dream, and it was very vivid. Now, this dream is from about 13 years ago, I think, and I can still remember it today. I don't remember what happened before the events of the dream, and I don't remember what happened after the events of the dream in my dream, but it was very vivid. And I want you to hold that thought and retain that thought in your consideration about the possibility of the certainty of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford about the events that she said happened to her, but yet all the people that she mentioned, not a single one of them knew anything about that. And the dream that I had was that I was at my brother's apartment where the second friend had lived. He passed away playing basketball one night with my brother. And he, at the end of this time, the dream, he says to my brother and me, "I'll see you later." And he looks at me and he says, "And I'll see you in 13 months." And I knew he was dead.
Oh,
and next to him was a pretty young lady that was wearing a charcoal gray cloak, hooded cloak, standing next to him. I didn't know who that was, had seen her before.
And this is in a dream.
This was all in a dream. And I thought, you know, and every, you know, the people that I knew in the dream were like themselves, and the apartment was completely laid out. I can tell you exactly the spot where we stood and everything about it. And so, I actually did kind of take action. I got life insurance, and I figured there's a 50-50 chance that this could happen. And as the 13 months approached, it was, well, it didn't happen. You know, he didn't say in 12 months, and he didn't say in 14 months. So that was the window that I was kind of paying attention, and it passed, and I'm still here today.
I'm glad he was wrong. I bet you are, too. And welcome back to Coast on our next Coast to Coast program, Friday night, of course. We're going to tell you how you can avoid psychic attacks, and then again, followed by those special open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're in our final segment with Dr. Manny Matus. His book is called The Borders of Normal. And Manny, when you were putting the book together, was there some part of it that just overwhelmed you that you did not expect that you came across when you were researching it and putting it together?
Well, I think the most interesting thing was the deathbed visions, you know, because I wasn't expecting that. I didn't realize how common that was. You know, we've certainly heard a lot about near-death experience and visions and out-of-body experiences associated with near-death experience, but I wasn't really familiar with the deathbed visions or the visions of deceased loved ones that are also very common.
The deathbed visions, do you think it's the body's way of making death a little more comfortable for people, or is it something that is strictly outside of the physical brain?
I think it's both. I think it's a combination, because I like to look at it from the point of view of the body, plus the mind, plus the emotional life, plus the spiritual life. So I think there's four different components, and each one is important.
What has been for you the most dramatic case you've come across?
That's a good question, because there's so many of them. I mean, there's cases of, for example, people who've had precognitive dreams that have helped them win lotteries.
Wow.
You know,
I don't get those kind of dreams.
No, me neither, but that's been verified. You know, I wanted to say one comment about your previous caller.
Sure.
When he was talking about the connection between paranormal experience and the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you look at the Bible, there's certainly lots of biblical prophets like Daniel and Ezekiel, or, for example, Joseph, you know, who had precognitive dreams or prophetic dreams, you might say. And even in the history of the church, people like St. Francis of Assisi or Joan of Arc, they heard voices. You know, when Joan was 13 years old, she said she saw a blinding white light, and she heard a voice which she identified as the Archangel Michael coming from her father's garden. So these experiences have been documented by many people throughout the Bible and throughout the history of the church. So I think there is a connection.
Yeah, there most definitely is. It's just remarkable how this works, Manny. It's you know, let's call it the God factor or whatever it might be, but it's out there. It's real.
Yeah.
The big question is, why is it there in the first place? What do you think?
The first thing that came to my mind is it's out there to make our lives more meaningful. It gives us a different level or a different dimension to our lives. And it somehow gives us something to feel like what we're going through, even if it's a painful experience, can have some meaning and can have some value.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take some final calls here for you. We will begin by going to Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Manny. I want to ask you a little bit more about the dreams. Interestingly, I had two dreams recently that began with a preface of the date. It said it's October 1st, and I end up at the beach. I go in the water. It's a little rough, but there's other people swimming, and it's unusually warm, which would be the case had I went. But I'd never really had a dream where it started off given the date, which was the same date in real life. So my question would be, with your dream about the test the next day, which was, you know, you had the first question, it's almost like the dream was a personal coach for you. So I'd ask you about that. You know, what do you think indicates that dreams are really acting in your favor, number one? And then if a dream is not quite current in your thinking, could there be aspects that are still really current and have current applications that you could cherry pick, and how would you do that?
Well, first of all, your first question, how do you know if the dream is acting in your favor? Well, I'd say, is the content of the dream a warning? You know, is it something that can be helpful for you in your daily life? Is it telling you about something that's coming up for you in your life, or is it about another person? So I'd say it's acting in your favor, first of all, if it's about you, not about another person. And if the action is beneficial. Now, in terms of can you cherry pick, I would say yes, because there can be some superfluous or extraneous material in the dream that's not necessarily related to the main point of the dream. So I think to a certain extent, you have to take out those parts of the dream which you feel apply to you and which can be helpful for you in your daily life.
Does that help you, Joe?
Yeah, that was good, yeah.
Okay, very good. Next up, we go to Mary in Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Mary, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
This doctor is so prophetic because I've had
right on
dreams that he's talking about. My father is the most prominent. Before he died, a week before he died, I tell people, my father walked up to death and shook his hand and went with it. I'm serious. A week before he died, he was talking to people. He was just so happy. He had been sick. He wouldn't tell us what was wrong. He was sick. And a week before he passed, he told the neighbor, are you ready to die? And she was shocked. She says, oh, I don't think about that. I have no way. And then he was just unusually happy. Then the night he passed, it was 3 a.m. I was 16. He woke me up at 3 a.m. and I was so sleepy. And he said, my brothers and sisters, and I knew most of his brothers and sisters were dead. They're out on the porch. They're waiting for me. And he said, I'm going with them. And I was so, he said, look, can't you see them? I looked out the screen. I didn't see anything. And I went back to sleep because I was so sleepy 3 a.m. He evidently left. I didn't know it. So we woke up the next morning, and my mother's like, have you guys seen your dad? And I told her, I said, Mom, he told me last night he was going with his brothers and sisters. And she was like shocked. She knew the ramifications, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And my dad, I think he was part Native or something, but he always told me, he said, when older people in the Native culture get old, he said, they go out in the woods or somewhere and they die. I've heard some people in Alaska get in a kayak and just go out in, you know, the water. And that's what he did. He went to this area that used to be an Indian burial ground area. And they found him like 2 weeks later. And I think some of it was in the South. Some people are really spooky. And if you die in a home, it likes bring bad stuff to it. Or he didn't want to frighten the kids, I think, because I think it would have kind of had us frightened. I don't know, but he knew he was dying. And when they found him, he did not look like he was struggling. They said it looked like he just sat somewhere and just passed.
That's a great story. And Manny, these visitors who come to us, whether they're dearly departed or strangers, but they visit us, is there like a role or a mission for them?
Well, if you're talking about the visitors that people who are dying have, definitely there's a mission because they help accompany the person to the other side. And especially what your caller was talking about, her father and the brothers and sisters came to visit, and then he went with them to the, and then they found his body 2 weeks later. So I would say they helped him accompany him to the other side. So, yeah, I would say they have a mission for sure.
We've got Matt, truck driving in Ohio. Welcome to the show. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Hey, George. I just had a question for the good doctor.
Sure.
If there's been any studies that have done anything about brain injury in any of these phenomena.
You were breaking up a little bit. Can you get closer to the phone, Matt?
Yep. Can you hear me now?
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any studies or anything done on brain injury and any of these phenomena.
All right.
Because in 92, I had a close head injury, and shortly after that, I started having precognitive dreams, and some of them became so disturbing that I prayed to God to take them away from me, and I haven't really had any since.
Manny, brain injuries causing some of these things. What do you think?
Yes, definitely. That's also been found in PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
There's a John Travolta movie where I think he had a head injury, and all of a sudden he was illuminated into the paranormal with psychic abilities.
I think, was that called Michael?
No, it wasn't that one. It was something else, but it was a great movie. But so you think, though, that some kind of injury to the brain could augment your psychic abilities?
Yes, it could open you up to different dimensions, because I've heard of cases, I know of people who have had near-death experiences, and then when they recover, they become psychic, and they're able to see auras, and they're able to, you know, predict the future, and they have all kinds of psychic abilities which they never had before.
Next up, let's go to Gary in Monterey, California. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to preface this because I'm a skeptical person, and I've got degrees, a couple of degrees in physics, and I taught physics engineering for years, so I'm kind of a, you know, that kind of guy.
Sure.
However, I had a dream that seemed to come true many years ago when I was in my 30s, And as a physicist, that's disturbing, you know, our view of space and time. Right now, doesn't seem to allow information to flow backward in time. So I thought I would make myself an experimental subject, and I tried for a year to record my dreams. And at first I tried, remember in the 70s, the portable tape recorders were kind of clunky.
Mm-hmm.
And to record, you'd have to hit two buttons, I think, like record and play at the same time.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it turned out that was a nightmare, like getting up at 3 a.m. and trying to hit those buttons. So I went back to just writing things down on paper. And of course, then the problem is getting yourself up out of a dream. I figured out a method for that that took me some months, but was reliable. And one night I had a very unusual dream. It doesn't seem unusual, like when I recite it, but what happened later will be interesting. And what it was is I was in a situation where I'm sitting with two other people, and we're sitting outside at some kind of a table, and we're enjoying ourselves having like lunch or something. And the one person is a male, and I feel very, very close to him and comfortable with him. And then there's a woman, and I don't know her. And at one point, the male says, and we're outside some kind of a format outside. I couldn't figure out what that meant. But anyway, he says, Gary, I have to go to the bathroom. Do you know where it is? And I said, no, but, you know, I do too. We had been drinking a couple glasses of wine. I said, I do too. And so, here, let's go look for it. And in his dream, we have to walk up, we're outside, but in some kind of structure outside. We walk up a couple steps, and then there's another walkway going both ways and more tables, and then we go up a couple of, just like many levels. And finally, I say, oh, look, there's the bathroom down there. And so I'm walking ahead of him and in the dream. And I get to the door, and I push the bathroom door open. And there, and I'm trying to not be gross about this, but there I see something unusual. And what it was is, in men's rooms have toilets, of course, with, you know, the doors closing and you're in little booths, and then they have urinals, right? Someone had, in the urinal, done number two. I mean, in other words, so I stopped in my tracks, and he ran into me, this fellow in my dream, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, somebody just did something really awful in here. And he said, what? And he peeked in. And at that point, I had a lot of foreign students I taught in college. We were recruited all over the Mideast and in the Pacific region, like Indonesia, Japan. And I had a lot of foreign students in my physics classes. And so I said, well, you know, maybe it's a person from another culture who didn't understand. And you know, he thought that was the place to go to the bathroom and the urinal. Okay, so I wake up, and I thought, that's a weird dream. I'm going to write this down in some detail. I woke myself up. Okay, so that's like on a Monday.
I'm almost out of time here, so I got to push you.
Okay, a couple days later, I get a call from an old friend of mine, a college buddy. We were roommates. We were good friends for 4 years. And he said, Gary, I'm going to be in San Francisco. I'm in Monterey. I'll be in San Francisco later this week. Do you want to meet me and my wife? And I said, sure. Okay, so I go to meet him. We're in San Francisco. We go to Ghirardelli Square somehow, which is an outdoor place where you sit outside and they serve lunch. And exactly what's in the dream that I just described happened.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I don't know what's paranormal about that, but that's just one weird dream to be sure. Manny, I want to thank you for being on the program. Good luck with the book. Where do you get the book, Manny?
Well, it's available at Amazon. And it's available at Barnes & Noble, and it's available at Chapters Indigo.
So it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Great. Thanks, Manny. Appreciate it. The Borders of Normal, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Tomorrow we talk about fighting off psychic attacks, and then, of course, open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrell, Tim Banal, Greg Bishop, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.